So I've been busy beginning to think about why, when we interact with artificial intelligence enhanced technology, we might actually feel as though we're chatting to a human being. I'm not sure whether you've been experimenting with ChatGPT or any of the other platforms. Have you had this feeling that maybe you are indeed having a conversation with a human being, or has it been really clear that this is no human?
Well, to me, in different places it feels like it's spookily like a person, and in others it's really clear that it's not.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. It's all over the place at the moment. Someone was even telling me the other day that when the interactions take place through speech, so you're hearing a response and then you're inputting the next prompt using your voice, things actually feel a little bit more real. But I got really interested in this because we know that earlier in 2024, earlier this year, someone in Hong Kong, a finance worker in Hong Kong, was actually tricked into paying $25 million to scammers who had used deepfake technology to pretend to be the company's chief financial officer. And this was through a video conference call. And so the employee thought that the images that were projected on the screen were actually his colleagues. It turns out this was fraud, and yet there was a multimillion dollar transfer made to people who were posing as friends. So this really got me thinking about, where do we draw the line? How do we know that we are actually conversing with humans as opposed to conversing with technology? And as you're saying, and I agree, you know, it's a little bit hit and miss at the moment, but we do know that technology is changing very rapidly. And so I got interested in what is it that we do as human beings when we have a conversation that sort of allows us to even convince ourselves that maybe we are interacting with another human. And it all comes down to the cooperative principle.
Please go on.
So the way that this works is that when we have a conversation with a human being, we assume that there will be cooperation. So, for example, if you ask me a question, the assumption is that I will answer. And if I don't, there'll be some sort of a move on your part to make sure that I'm okay, to make sure that I'm still on the line, to make sure that I've understood you. And then hopefully the second time around, you get your answer. And this also happens when you think about, say, telling the truth. When you're interacting with someone, you kind of assume that people are telling the truth. And when they lie to you, initially at least, generally, we take whatever lie has been presented to us as truth. And then maybe down the line, we realize, oh, actually, that wasn't truthful. But the reason we believe that someone is telling us the truth or someone is going to cooperate in conversation is because we know that in conversation, the underpinning value is one of cooperation. So then I got really interested because I said, okay, so we're interacting with ChatGPT, for example. We're asking it to do things. After a while, because it's just so friendly sounding and so personable, you know, you begin to almost warm up to it. And then you begin to apply, human beings begin to apply this cooperative principle to interactions with technology, although we are no longer cooperating with another human in that context. And so I just wanted to make people aware of this and how beautiful linguistics is, where we've been talking about the structure of conversation forever. And now it comes up again because we are going to be chatting way more with so-called chatbots. You know, as you were saying, these are not to be trusted 100% at the moment. But what about, I don't even want to give a timeline, but say 12 months from now, 24 months from now, where you may be able to just use your voice to activate all sorts of appliances. How is that going to work?
And that's a really good question that I have no idea, Celeste. And I'm thinking like 2030, imagine the technology and what we'll be doing in 2030, which is really,
yeah,
5 years is not very long in the grand arc of humanity, but in terms of technology and what we'll be listening to and what we'll be communicating with is mind-boggling and exciting.
Yeah, but the good thing about this, and I'm really glad you've mentioned this potential timeline of 5 years or whatever it is. We do know that things are changing rapidly. But something to consider is that the way human beings have evolved to interact with one another, to be able to get stuff done, to be able to survive in the face of adversity has really been based on our ability to cooperate in interaction. Let's not even call it conversation, mm-hmm. or at least let's not assume that everyone will use speech. It may be that you may be using written language, you may be using sign language, whatever form of communication we use as humans, it does rely on this cooperative principle. And this is a principle that has emerged as a result of us thriving in the face of adversity. And so I think what happens is that, yes, technology will continue to change. Yes, 5, 10, 15, 50 years from now, of course, there'll be plenty of different platforms and plenty of different forms to use technology. But the reality is that the way, the very fundamental way that we communicate is hardwired. And so there's a lot of the stuff that we've been chatting about in linguistics for a very long time that's actually now applying to this technology in a way that I think can make us more aware and more responsible in how we use it to really be able to tell our children, to be able to tell ourselves, yes, it may give me the illusion that I am having an interaction with a fellow human, but this is just a language model. This is just predicting text based on mathematical probability, and I am the one who is kind of humanizing it. And I think in so doing, then we're going to stop dehumanizing ourselves. So it's really taking that power away from the technology and really understanding that we are the ones in control, and we are the ones who are going to think of the technology in a particular way because that's how we're hardwired.
Celeste, what three aspects of language and language use would you like our listeners to remember as Language Lab comes to an end?
Yes. So it's been such a special time. We've been sharing, I think, for over 24 months now, which is amazing. And I wanted to just leave our listeners with three main truths about language. Language, number one, is that language is always changing. So there's no stasis when it comes to language. Even if we think things are more or less the way they were when we were younger or when our parents were younger, we know very well they're not.
Mm-hmm.
And they will continue to change a lot as the technology continues to sort of infiltrate everything we do. But generally, that's just the nature of language. It changes. Number two, language is power. So knowing about language, knowing how language works is really, really important because it can allow you to understand why people express themselves differently, for example, but also why you may have certain thoughts or certain sort of bottom lines when it comes to the use of technology and so on. And I also wanted to leave our listeners with this idea that all languages, in a way, retain like a crystallized way of perceiving reality. So every language that you speak, every language that you're able to access, whether you're watching something on Netflix and you've got the subtitles on,
mm-hmm.
whether you've studied a different language at school, whether you're bilingual or multilingual, whether you learn how to read a particular language, every single language will contain in it a particular view of the world. And I think this is something that we've really explored across different episodes of Language Lab that not two languages are similar in their view of the world, but at the same time, there are traits that are universal to human language, like the fact that language is always changing, or those principles around interaction. So this is what makes language study so interesting. You're getting both specificity and generality, and I think that's a very wonderful thing to remember about a language.
And what does 2025 look like for you?
Yes, well, very busy. We're going to be missing being on air, but I will be busy finishing a book on Aboriginal English. I think we've talked about this sometime in the past, a book that I'm co-authoring with Indigenous scholar Glenys Collard.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's going to be exciting. And I'm also quite involved now in providing high-level advice in artificial intelligence to the executive here at UWA. And towards the end of 2025, I'll be packing my bags and I'll be spending 3 months as a visiting fellow at the University of Oxford.
Oh,
I'm actually
wow.
quite excited about that. yeah, it's really, really good. I actually think this is the first sort of public, the first time that I've sort of talked about this in public hasn't really been officially announced, but it's really exciting. I wanted to thank you so much for the opportunity to chat linguistics throughout months and months of weekly and then monthly language labs. I hope that people still get an opportunity to access the material on the internet, and anyone interested in linguistics, don't be shy, you can reach out to us. We're here at the University of Western Australia.
Well, congratulations, Celeste. That's a great fellowship to be looking forward to. And thank you so much for you and your colleagues for all the wisdom that you've shared and the nuances of language that we've enjoyed in the Language Lab over the last couple of years. It's much appreciated.
It's been a pleasure. Take care.
Thank you.